Hello, America. Welcome to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine. I'm hosting today in place of Leslie Marshall. She is busy on Fox News, telling them off, I am sure. And, well, you know, I couldn't be on Fox News tonight, so I decided to come here. Actually, Leslie, of course, issued me an invitation. I'm always grateful, very honored to be on her show. And, heck, I could talk about women behind her back. And the woman I want to talk about tonight is the Republican trophy wife, Sarah Palin. You've heard of Sarah Palin. Everyone's heard of Sarah Palin. In fact, everyone may be a bit sick right now of Sarah Palin, even though she was, well, virtually unknown in the lower 48. A year ago? Can that be? Year and a half ago. Not that much longer. Year and 3 months ago, no one had heard of Sarah Palin. But now she is the Republican trophy wife. And like most trophy wives bought by rich, fat guys, she's pretty, but she's coarse and ignorant. And, well, the Republican Party thinks she looks good on her arm, right? But she has no substance, and she's actually pretty spiteful. The American people know this. They treat her as a laughingstock, but some in the Republican Party haven't learned it yet. And I, as a Democrat, could not be more supportive of any other nominee for the Republican nomination. Go, Sarah, go. Run, Sarah, run. So I'm actually not disappointed at her return on the screen. She, of course, had a recent interview with Oprah Winfrey. Did you see that? A friend of mine called me up and said, See, Sarah Palin's not so bad after all. She really is smart. She just didn't want to answer the question from Katie Couric about what book she read because the question was insulting. So I asked my friend, did she tell Oprah what book she reads? No, she never got around to that, even though Oprah specifically asked her and has a book club. She could have recommended something. No, Sarah Palin never did say what book she reads because it's insulting to ask her that question. It makes her seem stupid. Would anyone ask Hillary Clinton the same question my friend asked? You know, I bet someone did. And Clinton answered, and we moved on. It really wasn't that big a deal. But is Sarah Palin being unfairly treated? Is she being treated sexistly? There's a recent photo of her on the news cover of Newsweek. I don't know if you've seen it, but Sarah Palin has already complained about it. She has her running outfit on, and she's sitting there, and she's posing in her little shorts and looking very attractive. Sarah Palin, she's an attractive woman. You got to give her that. And she complains that that is portraying her in a sexist way. But I would suggest to you that people are portrayed that way when it seems like they put a lot of emphasis on their appearance. Let's take a couple men, for example. Let's look at John Edwards and how he was treated. Now, don't go into his affair and the wife and all that. That's not my point. My point is, look at how John Edwards was treated long before anyone knew about his affair. Right? The Republicans played him brushing his hair, I believe, and they would play the same 10 seconds over and over again, so it looked like he was brushing his hair for many minutes straight. And I think they played the song I Feel Pretty in the background. Was that sexist? Well, yeah, but it's a man. But the idea was he's a good-looking guy, so let's make fun of that. Why, I'm even old enough to remember when George Bush Sr. put Dan Quayle on the vice presidential ticket, and one of his aides said that was done to attract the ladies. Well, I have no doubt that Sarah Palin attracts a certain kind of man. In fact, the statistics show that at her rallies, 2/3 of those at her rallies were men. So I don't know if this was done to appease the women, but I know there are people out there, women or men, who vote based on appearance. In fact, there was an Italian prostitute, I think her name was Cicciolina, seems to ring a bell, who ran for the Italian parliament a few years back. And she was a pretty woman, and she was elected. I don't know that Americans are any better than Italians. But when it comes to substance, what is there with Sarah Palin? We know she prays a lot. We know she hunts a lot. We know that, she represents a certain portion of the Republican Party. And, heck, if you like no limits on guns and you want to shoot moose from helicopters and you don't really care whether your presidential nominee is too intelligent or not, you might like Sarah Palin. After all, half of America voted for George Bush and no one claimed that he was a rocket scientist. But people said that was unfair, and I want to hear from you. I want to know if you think I'm being unfair. People said it was unfair to say that Bush wasn't the brightest light bulb in the box. People say it's unfair to complain about the intelligence of Sarah Palin. Some have even said it's sexist. But when's the last time you heard anyone complain about the intelligence of Hillary Clinton? You may or may not like Hillary Clinton. I happen to be a big fan. But no one can deny she's brilliant. And I'm here to tell you that at Yale Law School, Bill Clinton was third in his class. Hillary Rodham was number one in the same class. I guess that means that Bill Clinton is very, very smart. His wife is just a tinge smarter. I'm not sure. It's not just liberals. There are certainly intelligent Republican women. Like it or not, with the policies of Condoleezza Rice, no one would ever suggest that Dr. Rice was not too smart. She's an intelligent woman. Sarah Palin is not. And I don't mind saying so. And I don't mind saying that I prefer that our leaders, that our presidential candidates be intelligent. In fact, I would go so far as to say they should be more intelligent than the average human being. Does that make me an elitist? Well, you know, I don't require above average intelligence with someone who is, doing some yard work for me or doing a lot of things, construction. There's a lot of good things that people can do. I mean, some are very intelligent. But when it comes to a policymaker, when it comes to someone whose hand is on the button, I don't know. I kind of wish they'd read a newspaper. George Bush didn't, and look what happened. And she can't name any she reads. When asked, as you recall, she said she reads all of them. And am I the only one that thinks that Sarah Palin is just a little bit snarky? I mean, look at the fact that she has all the babies on her arm, and she talks about what a good mother she is, and at the same time, she complains about the press focusing on her children. Well, I say you can have it one way or the other, right? You can bring your children in the photograph and talk again and again and again about what good parent you are, but then you can't complain if the media suggests that maybe you're not a good parent if you didn't, I don't know, inform your daughter about birth control. Or you can leave them out of the picture entirely. That's okay, too. But Sarah Palin seems to want to have it both ways. On Oprah, she refused to talk about Levi Johnston, and let's face it, I think most of us are as sick of him as we are of her, that she said it's inappropriate to talk about these private family matters. Fair enough, Oprah moved on. Until Sarah Palin started to call Levi Ricky Hollywood and talk about his new career as an aspiring porn star. She wants to have it both ways. And I would suggest to you the Republican Party wants to have it both ways, too. They want to say Sarah Palin is a serious policy person who could be president of the United States. And then they would say, don't ask Sarah serious questions. Don't insult her. Don't pretend that she doesn't know the answers just because you asked those questions. Don't people ask serious questions of President Obama? Didn't they ask serious questions of John McCain? Is it fair to ask those questions? Well, as Palin would say, you betcha. And it's also fair to examine her new book and find out if there are any untruths in it. If we're supposed to treat her seriously, we should find out whether her ghostwriter is telling the truth or not. And for that reason, coming up after the break, I've invited Carl Frisch of Media Matters. He's going to come on air and tell us. He's actually read the book. He's got more of a stomach, I guess, than I do for reading Sarah Palin's writing, or at least the writing of her ghostwriter. He's going to tell us what's in that book, what's true, what's false, so that you know the truth. And then I'm encourage you to call in as well. Let me know your thoughts on the matter. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. What do you think about Sarah Palin? Is she the Republican Party's trophy wife? Let me know right after this. Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine. I have the honor and privilege of filling in for Leslie Marshall tonight. And we're talking about Sarah Palin. Yes, Sarah Palin is back in the spotlight. And my guest today has been reading her works. Well, I don't know whether it was actually written by Sarah Palin or by her ghostwriter, who, You know, most of these politicians have ghostwriters write their books, but he's actually read her memoir, Going Rogue, and my guest is Carl Frisch. He is with Media Matters. You probably are aware that Media Matters are the people that actually read a lot of that right-wing stuff. They actually listen to Rush Limbaugh and do so to show all the ways that Rush Limbaugh is wrong. Well, now they're reading books as well, and I say thank God for that, because let's face it, if Sarah Palin's going to claim to write a book, we should at least read and see whether we can take her ideas seriously and find out if it's all true. So, Carl Frisch, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Just to be clear, I have often read books, and this is not the first.
No, but isn't that insulting? I mean, I can't ask you whether you've read books. Is that an insulting question, Carl?
I have read books from here and there, and I've read all the books that come to me that I'm available to, and so on and so forth.
I suspect you even read books outside of your job.
I do. Okay. Yeah, but we have launched this new project with Progressive Book Club, Media Matters and Progressive Book Club, called Right Wing Book Watch, and folks can find that at rightwingbookwatch.com. And essentially, we will be focusing on the conservative publishing industry and conservative authors and fact-checking major conservative books that come out. And the first book that we decided to tackle was the Palin book, which we got our hands on late last week. The book came out today, and in between then, we've been fact-checking the book and going through it piece by piece. We've even looked into her ghostwriter. So,
okay, well, I want to hear all those details, and I know our listeners do too. You know, you read the book so we don't have to, and we very much appreciate that. Give me, if you will, before we get into the specific details, the essence of Going Rogue. Is it that she's, dare we guess, a maverick?
Well, there's certainly a mavericky quality to it, I suppose.
That was the buzzword of the election.
Yeah, I think a lot of people in the media have been accurate to say that she's settling scores through much of it.
She's angry, isn't she?
Yeah, it's quite interesting, actually. She starts out in the book saying that she just hates it when people complain, but then the book is filled with complaint after complaint after complaint.
Is she more mad at John McCain, or, I mean, not John, she wouldn't say John McCain, at John McCain's people, or is she more mad at the media, or I guess a liberal?
I don't know who she's more mad at. Those are two groups that she's pretty darn mad at. She accuses the media of double standards. She goes after the McCain campaign staff. You know, last night, Nicole Wallace told NBC News that any conversation that Palin is, you know, articulating in this book must be a complete fabrication because Palin never took notes in any meetings. So, you know, there's obviously no love lost between the two sides, the two camps.
The McCain camp pretty much denying a lot of this whole turkey?
Yeah, they are. They've released emails from the campaign showing that things that Palin has said in the book just aren't true.
Well, let's get some specifics here. I love specifics. Okay. Tell me, what is she complaining that the John McCain's people did and said, and particularly the ones that aren't true?
Well, she claims that she was pushed into the Quirk interviews, which were actually like a 4 or 5 part series. In particular, you know, one instance, in the book she talks about how she wanted to do SNL, Saturday Night Live, but according to emails that the campaign released, she was actually against the idea from the beginning. So it's those kinds of things. But there are inconsistencies in this book and factual problems. You know, one thing that she... You remember when she said that Barack Obama was palling around with terrorists?
Sure. I even played it on my show, the clip of her. There was a large audience around her, and they were booing at the time. I remember
it
very well.
So she talks about that in the book and tries to blame it on the New York Times, just like she did during the campaign, saying that the New York Times had reported it. She was just passing along the information.
Yeah, she didn't seem to see a difference between having a remote association and palling around. I guess it's all the same to her.
Well, you know, the article that she cites actually says specifically that Bill Ayers and Barack Obama were not particularly close.
Right.
So that's her version of palling around, and of course she spins that way again in the book, just like she did on the campaign trail in 2008.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if someone in the John McCain campaign did push her to do some media interviews. I recall before she did the Katie Couric interview, there was a period of, it seemed like a month, maybe it was even 6 weeks, it seemed like forever, where she wasn't giving any media interviews,
right.
And the speculation was, well, she obviously wasn't, intelligent enough to cut it, to know
or
how to answer on policy matters.
She hadn't been prepared for it yet, or she was still practicing and all that other stuff, yeah. And then after the Couric interview, if memory serves me right, she did a series of Fox News interviews before doing anything with the legitimate media again, and that was over the course of several weeks. So, you know, she blames the media, she blames all kinds of people, but particularly the media, and she also goes after President Obama's time in office thus far in ways that are, you know, equally dubious.
Well, I want to get to all of those specifics because, like I said, I like specifics. But right now, we just have time to talk in generalities before the break, and then we're going to bring in some of our listeners, and I'll give you go through all the details. But I want to know your general view on the complaint that a lot of the media fascination with Sarah Palin is sexist. It's because she's a woman. It's because she's a pretty woman.
A lot of it is, but certainly some of it has been. You know, to claim that a woman with five children can't be as an effective, you know, generically, a woman with five children can't be a good vice president because how are they going to take care of the kids? That's sexist. We've never
asked. Let me ask you this. Who said that? Because I remember complaining.
That Joe Biden is going to have to go soft on her in a debate because she's a woman. That's sexist. But to claim, as she's done, you know, she uses sexism as a wedge when it suits her. So she'll complain about, you know, people talking about what she wears and how she's dressed. And at times that was sexist, but she makes it sound like, or she specifically says that no other candidates were held up to the scrutiny, when in fact we've documented that Hillary Clinton was held to that standard, Barack Obama's clothing and other things were held to a standard, and have we already all forgotten about John Edwards' $400 haircuts that got weeks of coverage during the campaign?
Right, I mentioned that, too.
So certainly no different. There could be an argument to be made that the media just shouldn't cover those things, but to somehow make make people think that you've been persecuted and you're the only one getting this treatment is just baloney.
You know, I remember 3 or 4 days spent on Barack Obama at the beach and talking about his hairless chest. I remember a lot of very much appearance comments, so forth. Listen, I want to hear what you have to say, listeners. What is your thoughts? 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Back after this. Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine. I have the honor and privilege of filling in for Leslie while she does progressive duty on Fox News. I hope they give her more than 20 seconds. Last time I was on Fox News, they gave me about 6 seconds before they interrupted me after talking with the Republican for 2 minutes. Oh, well, I guess I shouldn't be surprised. But we're talking about a Republican, specifically Republican Sarah Palin, a woman who I call the Republican's trophy wife. Do you think that's a sexist term? Hey, lay it on me. Call in. I can take it. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. I have as my guest Carl Frisch of Media Matters. Media Matters does an excellent job of watching the right-wing media and making sure that they are telling the truth, keeping them honest, telling us when they're making mistakes. And Carl Frisch has the ignominious distinction of being one of the few Americans who's actually read Sarah Palin's new book, Going Rogue. Carl, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I also want to get to some callers, too. Let me just ask you a quick question, and then we have you all half hour, so I'm going to get to all the specific ways in which the book has inaccuracies. But you mentioned, and I agree with you, by the way, that it is sexist to say that she couldn't be vice president while having five kids. I completely agree with you that obviously any parent can do that. The other parent can be with the children, or many people have nannies these days. But that comment, I don't believe, correct me if I'm wrong, was made by any Democrat or progressive. Who actually made that comment? Let me condemn that person right at the beginning.
It's been over a year. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I remember seeing it in news reports.
As I recall, it was some obscure commentator, and it wasn't anyone
You certainly saw a lot more of the Joe Biden's going to have to go soft on her because she's a woman.
See, I think Joe Biden had to go soft on her because she's relatively dumb.
They said John Kerry had to go
soft
Palin
on George Bush because he wasn't that clever. I mean, the fear was that if someone who really knows their stuff is arguing with someone who doesn't, then it looks like bullying. I don't know.
Although, you know, many in the media, the point, though, is that Sarah Palin likes to have it both ways with the charge of sexism. You know, during the campaign, when Hillary Clinton talked about sexism that she had encountered during the campaign, Sarah Palin said that Hillary should quit whining.
I remember that. I didn't know that, of course, at the time because no one knew who Sarah Palin was. But I did see the YouTube clips after she became famous. And there she is, Alaska Governor Sarah Palin, complaining that Hillary Clinton needed to stop whining. So you're absolutely right. Let me get a couple callers on, and then we'll go back to the specifics of the book. Craig is calling from Delaware. How about it, Craig? Am I being sexist to call her the Republican trophy wife?
Hey, Craig.
No, I wouldn't say sexist at all. No.
What are your thoughts on Sarah Palin?
Sure, I kind of like her in a way, but then, you know, there's other choices that John could have had. I like John a bit because we're both Navy veterans. I served while he was getting ready to retire. I started serving, and I retired in 2001 from the Navy. And I got a lot of respect for a man. Not from the fact that his father and his grandfather were admirals, and he
let me
say this: he kept his mouth shut.
I've had tremendous respect for John McCain for many years. And in fact,
he's a pretty good man. He's been doing a good job for the Senate. Sarah, I couldn't say much for her intelligence, you know. But then look at most politicians out there, and I mean, I'm not talking the current vice president, the recent presidents, you know, George or any of them. Some of them are up, some of them are down, but where it all matters is, you know, who they call for a cabinet. And their cabinet, they're supposed to pick the experts that can cover the areas. You follow me?
I do, but I think it also matters to have intelligence at the top. Let me be clear. There were intelligent people in the Bush White House. I think Dick Cheney is a brand of evil, but I've never suggested that he wasn't very smart.
And
Condoleezza Rice is certainly very smart. But here's the thing. Let me respond to you. Hold on, and then you can talk some more. All right?
Barack, he picked a few people.
Here's the thing. You know, when you had a guy like George Bush in charge, though, a lot of times he put his cronies there. Remember, he put the head of FEMA, a guy that was an Arabian horse trader. He put as his attorney general, Alberto Gonzalez, who really knew nothing about the law and certainly didn't respect the law. And one thing about Barack Obama and Joe Biden, if you want to disagree with their policies, go right ahead. This is America. You can disagree. But I don't think anyone can deny the two of them are very intelligent men.
No, I can't agree with you on Joe Biden, though. I mean, Joe, I think Barack picked Joe because everybody thinks that Joe can talk to the common man, the blue-collar workers, because, you know, he was a blue-collar worker in a way. He started out as a used car salesman, went up to be a, I can't remember what it was. He was community government, and he worked his way up into the House and then into the Senate, right?
Actually, I believe Joe Biden started as a senator.
He was a county attorney, and then he became a senator at 29.
Right. In fact, he was so young that he couldn't even take office for a few days.
So the guy's got, you know, he's got tenacity. I got a lot of respect for a person with tenacity that, despite the difficulties going on, everybody putting you down and saying, man, it's tough, you can't do that, I'll spit him out, you know?
Okay, what's your point on Palin, Craig?
This is the number one place in the world where people from other countries want to go because you can do it. I don't care where you start.
Okay. What's your point on Palin?
Well, okay, yeah, let's get with Sarah, okay? Man, about those pictures in Newsweek, you know, I haven't seen them, but I heard about them today on the radio. I've been driving for 5 hours now, and from what I understand, they were from back in 1994 from a runner's magazine, you know.
They were from a runner's magazine. I don't know that they were that old, but they were definitely from a runner's magazine.
Last year.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen it, so I can't really, you know, vouch for them. I won't testify on a stack of Bibles or none of that stuff, but, you know, they didn't even get a photo of her.
I could see here, Carl Frisch is right. It's from, Craig, it's from an August 2009 issue of Runner's World. So the photos were taken really the same month she was chosen to be the vice presidential nominee. So they're not old pictures. She certainly is posing in her runner's outfit. But,
well,
I remember seeing George Bush in runner outfits. I don't know.
Yeah, my problem with the photos and whatnot are
hang on, let Carl talk. One second.
The cover of the magazine distracts from the content of the stories about the book. And if you look at the photos inside the magazine, one of the photos they chose doesn't even have her face in it. It's just her calves, and the audience threw her legs.
That's kind of sexist.
The other photo that they choose isn't even Sarah Palin. It's a bobblehead of Sarah Palin dressed like a slutty Catholic school kid, like a Britney Spears doll. Why they even use that, I have no idea. But it certainly doesn't help their case when they're going through this book or talking about Palin's abilities when they start on this level. You know, the cover is more reminiscent of, you know, a Rolling Stone cover or a Runner's magazine. It's not something you would expect to see on the cover of Newsweek.
I think that's fair. Hey, Craig, I appreciate your call. I do want to hear a woman's perspective, and I know Joanne is hanging on the line, but first we're going to take a little break. If you want to join in the discussion, it's 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Back after this. Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine. I have the honor and privilege of sitting in Leslie's shoes tonight, and I'm always grateful when she lets me guest host the show. And we're talking about Sarah Palin with Carl Frisch of Media Matters. You've probably heard of Media Matters. They've been doing right-wing watch for quite a long time. They've been watching Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and catching them when they frequently make mistakes of fact. And now he's watching Sarah Palin's new book, Going Rogue. And we've got some callers on the line. Joanne from New York, I want a woman's perspective. Please call back. I hope she will. But I'm asking my callers to hang on for just a second because, Carl, we've talked enough about feminism and the attacks. Let's get to policy. She says she's not taken seriously as a policy analyst. What are her policy views and what facts does she get right or wrong?
Well, it's quite funny because Rush Limbaugh last week claimed that Going Rogue had some really great policy positions and it was loaded with, you know, policy talking points and whatnot.
Is in there?
Not much. I don't think Rush had even picked up the book yet.
Well, what's her new idea? Give me a single new idea that Sarah Palin has that's different or interesting or hasn't been talked to
that.
Much before.
It's not possible.
Well, so what's in the book? What are her policy ideas? Let me guess. Less taxes, less government,
all of that,
more religion. Did I get it right?
There is nothing new in the book. There is very little policy, actually, in the book, and none of what is in there is new. Most of the book is about settling scores with, the McCain campaign, the media, Obama, et cetera, or attacking the president. There is no there when it comes to policy, which I suppose is why Carl Cameron, independent of Rush Limbaugh, said on Fox News that there just wasn't much policy stuff in there at all.
Wow, Fox admitted that. Hmm.
Well, they were not doing that, by the way, to take a shot at Limbaugh. I don't think they knew Limbaugh said it was filled with policy stuff.
I think the Republican Party's got a real problem with Sarah Palin. That's where I agree with Newsweek's, at least the title of their cover article, How Do You Solve a Problem Like Sarah? She appeals in a demagogic way to a lot of people who don't know policy, people who don't really care so much about Washington, but like someone who gives it to the man, right? There are people out there that just want to see everything shook up, and they think, let's throw someone like Sarah Palin in there, you know, the barracuda, the pit bull, someone who frankly doesn't know what she's doing, but she'll bite everyone, and they'll all scream, and they'll feel better. and there's anger there that causes people to support Sarah Palin.
Well, and there's, you know, we have to remember that even at the end of the Bush administration, 20% of this country thought he was doing a good job. So, when Sarah Palin tours the country and is very popular with about 20% of the people, we know who she's popular with. She's popular with people who are more concerned with, punching a progressive or killing a progressive initiative than they are with ever making progress, and they will believe whatever they're told by Fox News and conservative talk radio. They can be confronted by factual analysis and reject it because, as we all know, science and facts have a quantifiable liberal bias.
Well, let's do some factual analysis because I admit it, I'm a liberal, I'm dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, and I appreciate facts. So one of the things I really like about Media Matters, and I use it on my own talk show, is I find out all the facts. You know, the right-wing media says this, and then, Media Matters will tell me what's the truth, and they'll give me a website that I can trust. And so give me, what does she get factually wrong in the book? What are some serious factual errors, or does she get everything pretty much right as far as basic facts go?
Oh, no, she certainly doesn't get anywhere near it.
Give me some
right.
examples.
For instance, she suggests that cap and trade, the poor will be the hardest hit. She writes that in her book, and she also claims that Barack Obama said that if cap and trade passed, energy prices would skyrocket. Tackling those two things. First of all, the Congressional Budget Office, which is nonpartisan, says that the poorest of the poor would actually benefit from cap and trade. They'd probably get about $100. Obama.
Just to be fair for our listeners who don't know, most people do know, but just to be clear, cap and trade is the policy that, in fact, it's now going through Congress right now. It's President Obama's policy to cap emissions. It's the kind of thing that pollutes our air and water and creates global warming, and to trade it so that you have basically people who want to pollute have to pay higher for it. And he's got specifically in that bill a subsidy for the poorest, and as you point out, they'd be better off. Just to clarify that. Go ahead.
And on top of that, when he said the word skyrocketing, he wasn't even talking about cap and trade. He was talking about a different plan that's not even being considered. So Palin gets the facts wrong on both accounts.
Give me some
more
facts and errors.
She also claims that the reason that she vetoed stimulus money that was coming into her state for energy efficiency was because there were tough building standards that would have to apply to all new construction in the state. Even PolitiFact pointed out that was just baseless and wrong. There were no such things in there. They could have taken the money. And it's equally duplicitous when you compare it to what she says, that she's for any kind of energy alternative, everything and anything, she says. I already talked about the palling around with terrorists thing. That was a big one. She attacks President Obama for voting as a state senator against legislation that she claims would have made it illegal in Illinois to kill a fetus that from botched abortions that live after the abortion. She claims that he voted against legislation to outlaw that. It was already against the law.
I happen to know that legislation because I worked on it personally. I was a staffer for the House Judiciary Committee as a congressional attorney. Worked for Barney Frank, and at that time they brought up this legislation, and it's one of the things that those who are very much against abortion will bring up. They'll say, look, let's make it illegal to kill babies, and we have to patiently explain it's already illegal to kill babies. I say, you want to kill babies? No, it's already illegal to kill babies.
In that legislation, it even goes further than that against choice, and that's why Obama and most of the Democrats in the legislature in Illinois voted against it. So she's wrong on that. She also suggests that there's no such thing as hunting from helicopters in Alaska, which is just an outright lie.
I thought she vetoed a bill by the Alaskan legislature to prevent it.
Yeah, and she also supports the program that allows it.
And then she denies that it occurs? Well, that's just weird. That's just disconnect.
Yeah.
Did she forget?
When you have no respect for reality or factual consistency, you have no problems doing these mental gymnastics.
Let me suggest to you, Carl, that one is a good one to focus on, not because cap and trade isn't important or the abortion bills aren't important, but, those are bills that you have to wade through the thicket, and a lot of people aren't willing to do that to find out whether she's telling the truth or not, whereas the helicopter gunships, shooting down wolves from the air is something that virtually everyone heard about during the campaign. Virtually everyone knows that she supports it. Her denial of that, I think, makes it look pretty silly.
Yeah, and these are just a few of the examples. I mean, people can go to MediaMatters.org every single day, and we're updating our running tally of errors in there, and some are just as clear-cut as the hunting from wolves from a helicopter to the more kind of detailed factual analysis of policies that she talks about or attacks that she makes on progressive policies.
The point is that
you can hardly go past a certain page in the book without having a problem with reality.
I think Sarah Palin represents to the Republican Party much of the problem that, say, an Al Sharpton represents to Democrats. In other words, she does speak for a sizable segment of the party activists, but she does not speak in any way for a majority of Americans, and maybe not even for a majority of Republicans. I think a lot of Republicans are embarrassed by her, and yet they can't really diss her because they know that, hey, she's got a very strong fans.
And at the same time, she's kind of filled this void. There is no leader right now of the conservative movement or the Republican Party, and that's why folks like Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin have been able to just step in and take it over. And it's also why people that actually do the work day-to-day within the movement and the party cannot object to these characters because they have such sway. If they do attack, you've seen members of Congress come after Rush Limbaugh in the last year, and as soon as he finds out about it, pressure builds, they back off, they apologize, they go on his show, and they kiss his ring. because that's how much power these people have.
Well, why haven't other Republicans stepped up to the plate? I mean, I think of Governor Pawlenty of Minnesota or Bobby Jindal of Louisiana. They trotted him out to respond to the State of the Union address. How come these people who are conservative, why doesn't the right-wing media focus on them? Is it because Sarah Palin has a certain glamour?
I think that's part of it, but the other part of it is, you know, she was the vice presidential nominee. And then you consider that the right-wing press doesn't like John McCain, so their next person is going to be Palin. And then these other people, like Pawlenty, like Jindal, like Mitt Romney, they've not been a nominee, so as hard as they may try, they're not capable of doing things like a Palin, like a McCain. So at best, they're just one of the cast of figures that are vying for support in 4 years.
Has John McCain definitely stepped down? I mean, you could argue that he was the nominee. He is the leader of the Republican Party, at least until they get a majority in one of the houses of Congress. He's really backed away, it seems, from the media mics.
Yeah, you don't see him that often. And, you know, part of that is because, you know, he came back to the Senate after a campaign in which he shed any resemblance to the senator that Democrats had liked because he was a compromiser or what have you.
Should we give full disclosure about your own past here, Carl?
What's that?
Should we give full disclosure about your own past here, Carl? You used to work for Senator John McCain.
Yeah, by the way, I don't buy the whole thing about him being a maverick, so I was going to get ready to drop the bomb on that. But certainly the media doesn't think of him in that way anymore. But for a lot of people, we always knew that he wasn't a maverick. I mean, all you had to do was look at his voting record. I worked for him in 2000. His voting record was extremely conservative on all the issues that one would expect him to have to be, abortion, gays, et cetera. It hasn't changed at all. All he does is step out every now and then on an issue that has broad support with the American people but is not popular with right-wing funding sources. He steps out as the compromise guy. He gets all the credit. He gets the kudos. The media calls him a maverick, and they go home for the day.
Carl, yeah. I'm afraid our time is up for the hour. I very much appreciate your being here and having converted from John McCain's cause to the progressive cause. The phone number is 888-6-LESLIE. Give us a call. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine. I'm guest hosting for Leslie this hour. I am always honored and privileged to have that responsibility. And I'm sure you'll hear from Leslie quite soon. Hopefully, actually, tonight. I think she'll be back from her appearance on Fox News, and we'll hear from her some of her thoughts on Sarah Palin. But I want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on her? Has the media been unfair to her? Would you actually go out and buy her book, Going Rogue? I, for one, will not. By the way, if you want to call in, the toll-free number, of course, is 888-6-LESLIE. 888-6-LESLIE, and if you like numbers rather than letters, 888-653-7543. I particularly want to hear from women. I want to know if the media has been unfair to Sarah Palin. One of the best book reviews I've read on her book, and no, I don't intend to read it. I don't. I'm not a glutton for that much punishment. But one of the best book reviews I've read is actually in the Wall Street Journal. By Thomas Frank. You wouldn't think the Wall Street Journal would publish an op-ed such as this, but actually it's pretty impressive, and I invite you, when we're done with the broadcast, to check it out on the Wall Street Journal website, because he goes through so much of her vindictiveness. It seems there's so much detail. She's mad at this person. She's mad at that person. This person once wore a T-shirt that was anti-Palin. This person once resented her children's toys. It goes on and on and on and on and on. And she's very, very angry. It seems like this is someone who wants to tear down rather than build up. Here's a guy that was on the phone last hour. We didn't get a chance to get to him, but I'm happy to hear from you now, Bill. Bill from Milford, Virginia. What are your views on Sarah Palin?
Well, you're bouncing into Virginia still well, so I'm, you kept me awake driving in the dark. Let's see, too bad Joanne dropped off the line, but that put me next in line. But then is Carl still around?
No, Carl's gone, but I'll stick up for him. Go ahead, say what you want to say.
Okay, you did an excellent job, Mark, of trying to get some substance from Carl as far as where Sarah Palin stands. So I'm curious whether Carl is familiar with the interview of Rush Limbaugh of Sarah Palin, like 1:10 this afternoon when I was driving around.
Why didn't you tell us about it?
Pardon me?
Why don't you tell us about it?
The first topic that they talked about was the economy.
Okay.
And tax cuts three times in the last, 50 years have solved recessions. And that's what
okay.
Rush and Sarah were talking about this afternoon. So I was hoping that...
Do you also agree that government spending helps recessions?
Say that again, please.
Do you also agree that government spending helps recessions?
When?
I don't know, in the 30s, in the 60s, in the 90s. Here's the thing, and I'm not just saying this off the top of my head, and I said this on Fox News, and they attacked me for saying it, but I'm still going to tell it right here on the air. I do have a degree in economics, and yes, it is a degree from Harvard, and I went on Fox News, and all they could do was say, oh, you went to Harvard, you don't know anything. Well, let me tell you what they taught me in my economics class, and I think you'll find, Bill, that anyone who's had a basic economics class in any college in this nation, or probably even in high school, will teach you that there are two ways to stimulate the economy. Yes, tax cuts stimulate the economy. Yes, government spending stimulates the economy. In fact, economists will tell you that on average, government spending actually stimulates the economy a little bit more because tax cuts, particularly tax cuts to the very rich, they tend to just save the money and put it in their bank account, whereas if you give tax cuts to poor people or you spend government spending, the money's more likely to get out there. But I don't dispute that both tax cuts and government spending stimulate the economy. Whether you like one or the other has to do with your political philosophy. You may believe that we need tax cuts. You may believe that we need more government spending. But for Sarah Palin to say, as she said in her book, and I get this from Thomas Frank's review in the Wall Street Journal, that it didn't work in the 1930s for us to spend a lot of money and get us out of the Depression, yeah, it did. And any economist will tell you it did. And to say, oh, well, World War II did it, what is that? That's government spending.
Well, my mother lived through the Depression in the 30s, and she doesn't remember the government getting us out of the Deep Depression.
Well, you know, she may not have been aware of the statistics of the 1930s. She may not have pored over unemployment charts. She may not have known about the WPA and the CCC and all that's done. You know, that's okay. I don't expect her to. But the government did get us out of the Great Depression. And frankly, the stimulus package has done an amazing job. I remember people saying just 1 year ago that we were headed for another Great Depression. I remember people saying that there was no way out. I even had a Republican guest on my show say in February of 2009, there's no way Obama can get us out of this recession before 2010. And already we're seeing signs of recovery. And I have to say the reason for that is the stimulus package. I think, in fact, had it been larger, we would be out even more out of the recession. And if you want to do tax cuts, that's fine. That's a different way of stimulating the economy. We can argue over which is better in which scenario. But I just don't think Sarah Palin is an expert on this kind of stuff.
Well, do you think we're not going to have a double dip as far as the recession?
No, I don't. But I do think that the stimulus package should have been larger. You know, one of the things I really hated about what the Republicans did, you may remember, in order to get past the Republican filibuster in the Senate, he had to bring some Republicans on board. At the time, Arlen Specter was a Republican. He also needed Olympia Snowe and Susan Collins. And what they insisted on doing is cutting aid to the states. The original stimulus package, and I know all this because I'm a bit of a policy wonk. I used to work in Congress. The original stimulus package gave about 70-something billion dollars to the states, and they cut it to 40-something billion dollars. And the reason why it matters is that states, unlike the federal government, have to balance their budget. They have no choice in the matter. And because they have to balance their budget, in hard times, states have real problems because tax receipts go down and unemployment benefits and other things like that go up. So in order to balance their budgets, what do they have to do? Individual states are required to raise taxes or to cut spending, further harming the economy. President Obama and the Democrats had a very good idea. They said, let's take money from the federal government, which can borrow money, and give it to the states so the states don't have to punish their own constituents. And Republicans said, no. We want people to be punished. We want taxes to go up in various states. We want states to cut their spending. We want the recession to be tougher. And then voters can vote out like the governors of Virginia and New Jersey. So I really regret that. I think the stimulus package should have been larger, but I do think it's doing some good.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for your call. I do appreciate it. Let me hear from Jeremy in Buffalo. Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Mark. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
It's good to hear you. I like you when you come in on this show. I never have a chance to catch your own.
Please
to hear you.
Please check it out. I'm at radioinsidescoop.com. All the information's there. You can check it out or just go to marklevineradio.com. You can watch my appearances on Fox. I want you to know, the same thing that I just said to Bill, I tried to explain on Fox News, but they wouldn't give me more than about 5 seconds, and they just spent all the time laughing about my Harvard degree. So if you want to check that out, it's on my website. To me, it shows that, frankly, there's an anti-intellectualism among Fox. It's not just that they hate liberals. They actually really hate, training, intelligence. It reminds me somebody who would say, oh, yeah, you think you're so smart just because you're a neurosurgeon. I can do that. I have a knife. Let me cut into your skull. You know, people, they just don't respect that there actually is this profession called economics, and they might know something. But I'm getting off topic.
I'm actually a teacher in the Buffalo area.
Okay. What do you teach?
Talking about, I called to talk about Palin, but I didn't have much to say about her anyway. But what you were talking about with your last caller about the stimulus package, I would not have a job right now if it wasn't for the stimulus package.
There you go.
And I just got back. I actually pulled over to the side of the road when I called you. I just got back from shopping for Christmas, which I would not have been able to do.
There you
go. I didn't have a job. I think I'm feeding the economy of my area here.
I suspect you work for...
said his mom didn't see,
right,
you know, herself getting out of the recession, then obviously she must have had a really, really poor livelihood, because I see it on a daily basis that we're getting out of this recession.
Tell me this. Are you a public school teacher?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so you work for... I guess the city of Buffalo would be your employer?
Not the city of Buffalo. I'm on the outskirts.
Okay, but you work for a local town or city in New York?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, that's exactly my point about the stimulus package. That aid to the states was very important. Without that aid to the states, states would have to cut teachers, cut police officers, cut firefighters, cut all the people on the state payroll. My point is it should have been larger, and in fact, the original Democratic package was larger. It was Republicans who cut it down. And when I saw this crowing about, oh, we won in Virginia, we won in New Jersey from the Republicans, I have to think that one of the reasons why Democrats lost was due to the economy, and one of the reasons why the economy was bad locally is because the stimulus package wasn't large enough. So
I agree. There were some teachers in my building that lost their jobs.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, we didn't have as big of a cut as there could have been. You
right.
know? So yeah, definitely. We can always use a little bit extra.
Always. Let's
talk
about Palin.
What I wanted to say about Palin quickly is just, and I know it's not your fault. It's radio. It's important. It's going on. It's what's going on right now. She's selling a book. She's on the cover of Newsweek. But we got to stop feeding the monster. She's useless. I don't see any worth to her at all.
Well, Jeremy,
whenever I see her on the television and see what's going on, I mean, part of me loves it because I'm a Democrat.
Right.
I love to see that they're feeding this monster and that hopefully she'll be running against Barack Obama and it'll be a landslide. But at the same time, I don't remember, like, we don't talk about Quayle. Quayle was a waste of space in that job situation.
Right.
When he was out of it, we never talked to him about it again. She just ran as a vice presidential nominee, and she's lost. And she lost strong, and she lost for a reason. And we still talk about it. We still bring her up. And it just seems like we're feeding, like I said, the monster. And
is that she's seeking the limelight herself. Now, admittedly, there is a fascination. She's a pretty woman. She's relatively young as a candidate for vice president. But you know, she left. She could have stayed and been governor of Alaska and done the mundane task of being a governor and having to make difficult decisions, like in a difficult time, do you raise taxes or do you cut spending? And instead, she quit her job and went rogue, right? I mean, she's now with her book. I'm sure that her ghostwriter worked very hard on that book and, asked her a few questions and wrote it all down. And, you know, I don't know. As an American, I guess you're right. I guess her 15 minutes of fame is up. Why are we still focusing on her? As a Democrat, though, I got to say, I'm all for Sarah Palin. Promote her as much as you want. If this is the best the Republican Party can do, they're going to be a minority party for the next 20 years. So I say, go Palin, go. I mean, I think she's an embarrassment. Not, frankly, she's an embarrassment to many Republicans. Many Republicans will tell you, quietly, maybe not loudly. I've even had Republicans on my show, and I won't give their names because the comment was off the record. But they will tell me after the interview, actually, I really don't like Sarah Palin. but in public, they'll defend her to the hilt. She's embarrassing to them.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me, Mark.
And I also think
keep up the good work, and I will look you up.
Please do, and I will try to be on Leslie's show as much as often. And heck, talk to them in Buffalo. Maybe I could, be on the middle of the night or something. Thanks for calling in. The toll-free number is 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine filling in for Leslie Marshall. I was talking with Leslie's terrific producer. He's just an amazing guy, real good guy, Mark Grimaldi. She has him on the air from time to time. And I'm going to get him to play for you some of what I was just talking about. That wasn't my intent tonight, but hey, one of the nice things about talk radio is you can do things on the fly. And coming up at the bottom half of the hour, I'm going to play for you my own interview on Fox News, where I try to patiently explain to the people at Fox News just some basic economics. And you'll find out that it so unnerves them that they have to keep interrupting me. It's really a very, very simple economic concept, which is that in a good time, you should run a surplus, like Bill Clinton did in the 1990s, and in a bad time, you should run a deficit, because tax cuts, or even better, government spending, primes the economy. It gets the economy going. Any economist will tell you that Herbert Hoover took what was really not that terrible a depression. It was the stock market crash of 1929, and there were some hard times. But what did he do with those hard times? He balanced the budget. And there are times for balancing the budget, but 1930 was not that time. When you balance the budget when times are already hard, what do? You take more money from people, you raise taxes, you cut spending, you cut jobs, you make things worse. So Herbert Hoover took a bad situation and turned it into a Great Depression. Franklin Roosevelt undid that. He undid Herbert Hoover's plan. He did a lot of government spending, and that primed the pump and, yes, brought us out of the Great Depression. It really is basic economic theory. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm always for deficits. I mean, you do have to pay deficits back. I recognize that. And I think in good times, you need a surplus. That's one of the best things that Bill Clinton did. In the 1990s, Bill Clinton had a surplus. Indeed, he had the largest budget surplus ever in American history. And that was as it should be. The 1990s were also the best economy America's ever seen, the longest period of expansion ever in American history. You know, when Democrats are in charge, the economy goes pretty well. Now, when George Bush was in charge, right, the economy wasn't near as strong as it was under Bill Clinton's day, but there were some times when the market was going up. You remember those times that the market was going up, housing prices were going up, tax revenues were going up. That was the time to have a surplus. But Republicans didn't do a surplus in good times, the way any economist will tell you. No. They knew that voters liked government spending. They knew that voters liked tax cuts. So they did tax cuts and government spending, giving us the massive deficit we have today, over $1 trillion, that President Obama inherited. And now they have the audacity to come in and complain that President Obama needs to do deficit spending to get us out of the recession. Now, either they don't understand basic economics, and that may well be true, or they simply know that Americans love government spending, they love tax cuts, and they just want them all the time. But anyone could tell you that, you know, you may like that tasty cough syrup, but you only take the medicine when you need it. You don't take it when you don't need it. So I tried to explain this basic economic theory to the good people on Fox, and when they weren't listening to me, I did, yes, talk about my credentials, because I wanted people to know I wasn't making this stuff up, that every economist understands this kind of thing, and yes, these are the kinds of things that are taught at Harvard. Well, you'll hear their response. We're going to play it when we get back from break. You know, for them, it was all so much Harvard mumbo-jumbo. Because I think there is an anti-intellectual element in the Republican Party. And I want to talk about that after the break. There are definitely intellectual Republicans. George Will immediately comes to mind, as does the late William F. Buckley. There are certainly, you know, I detest Dick Cheney and Karl Rove, but I would never attack their intelligence. Condoleezza Rice, very intelligent woman. There are smart Republicans. But to me, Sarah Palin represents more than just a pretty woman. She represents a descent into anti-intellectualism. You know, there used to be a know-nothing party in the United States back in the 19th century that proudly walked around and talked about how little they knew. And sometimes I think today's Republican Party, with its heroes of Sarah Palin and Rush Limbaugh, are doing exactly the same thing. They're proud of how little they know. And either they don't understand basic economics, or they pretend not to, so as to convince Americans to vote their way. Look what they did with the death panels, right? There is no such thing as a death panel in the proposed health insurance reform bill that's going through Congress right now. It simply allows people to make end-of-life decisions if they so want. But Republicans complained about death panels, and lo and behold, there are a bunch of willing idiots, yes, I said it, idiots, ready to listen to Rush Limbaugh and believe every word he said. So what do you do? How do you get through to people who want to be an idiot? I don't know that I have the answer, but I hope you'll help me out. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. We'll be right back after this. Welcome to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine. I have the privilege of guest hosting for Leslie this hour, although I think she'll be back next hour, so you can complain to her if you want about me, or heck, you can also praise if you like it. I appreciate praise. Jeremy from Buffalo gave me a lot of praise. He said he's going to check out my website. I encourage you to do the same. It's radioinsidescoop.com. Or if you can't remember that mouthful, just go to marklevineradio.com, MarkLevineRadio.com. And when you go there, you'll be able to see a clip that I'm about to play for you. And the reason I'm playing the clip is, no, it's not to do self-promotion. Yes, I was on Fox. Leslie's on Fox all the time. I don't mind going on Fox, except for the fact that they never let me finish a sentence. You know, I get used to that as a talk radio host. I can go on and on for, hours on end. But it appears on Fox News, I can never get more than about 5 seconds out. Now, you heard me last half hour describe basic economic theory, how in good times you should run a surplus and in bad times you should run a deficit. And I know, in fact, we have a caller on the line. Tim, hang on just a minute. And he wants to talk with me about that, too. But listen to what happened on Fox News when I tried to explain this basic economic theory to the two people attacking me on Fox.
So can Republicans turn tomorrow's elections into a referendum on bloated government? Or maybe the Blue Dogs can do that. Mark Levine is a Democratic analyst. He joins us now from Washington, D.C.
Democrat.
Well, Mark, do you think that I and other conservatives are making too much of the idea of a bloated government? That is, do you think it's a bad issue on which to base a campaign?
I think it's ironic. I think if we had a bigger government, the Democrats would be doing better. You see, we're in a recession.
Bigger,
right now.
Hold on, Mark. We haven't had a government this big since World War II. It's a 12% deficit that we're running now. You think we should have a bigger government?
That's exactly right. Any economist will tell you that in bad times, you need more government spending. In good times, you need less government spending. The problem with the Republicans is they spent a lot in good times.
They did.
They
ran
up the deficit.
They did. It's true. But again, do you think the public, I mean, I could argue with you on economic theory, being a Friedmanite economist. But the fact is, do you really think that the public believes that a bigger government that we have now would be better for the country?
No, I don't think the public understands it all, but my Harvard economist professors would be very upset with me if I didn't say the truth, which is that you need to spend more money in bad times.
Yeah, but
yes, let's look to Harvard. You know, I didn't go to Harvard, but I can even say that, Mr. Levine, you are wrong.
The electorate, the bottom line is the electorate of the American people is more than just the Harvard professors.
That's absolutely right.
I don't think they think, I'm talking about they meaning the voting public, believe that we need a bigger government than what we have right now. Do you?
I think that you'll find that when the Republicans are in charge, they want a bigger government. When the Democrats are in charge, they want a bigger government.
That's not what
they
I asked, Mark. Hold on. Answer the specific question. Does the American public now think that government is too small?
It depends who you talk to, right? Liberals want a bigger government right now because the government's going to do things liberals want, like provide children health care. When the Republicans are in charge, they want a bigger government because it'll do things like they want, like wars.
All
it's
right,
very
but,
simple,
but,
really.
But again, finally, I got to press you on this, Mark.
Okay.
The American public, I mean, there are polls out there, and most of the polls that I see say the government is either too big or big enough as it is. You see things differently.
Look, the stimulus package, as you remember, was made smaller because Republicans insisted on it having less aid to the states. What does that mean? That means in states like Virginia and New Jersey that have to balance their budgets, they've got to raise taxes or cut spending. It makes it harder for people. They suffer hard times. They vote against the incumbent.
I think I just hallucinated still from the last segment where he said that more spending and bigger government, more Americans want that in their lives. That's absolutely not true. And you know what?
It
you don't
help.
Need a Harvard degree to tell you that. Look at history. I mean, look at the New Deal. The New Deal is not what got us out of the Great Depression. It was World War II.
Sure it is.
No, it's not. Take your Harvard mumbo jumbo and look, I didn't have to spend
every
all that
economist
money on a degree
will tell
to say
you
that was wrong. The American public, and this transcends all polls, any poll, particularly independents, say there's way too much spending going on. And in elections, David, that's really what matters tomorrow. Watch the independents. Watch
all
where
right.
they go.
They'll Last word, Andrea. Mark,
so there you go. You heard the clip on Fox News. They always end on the conservative. They actually began with her for about 2 minutes. I didn't include that clip for you. But, yeah, this is the point I was trying to make. And it seems to me really, I don't know, I think there's an anti-intellectual strain in the Republican Party. Rather than deal with my argument, the question of whether or not in bad times you need government spending, which I think is pretty obvious. Even the Republican there said, she said it was World War II. Fine, what was World War II? Massive government spending. Either way, government spending gets you out of a recession. And look, you know, sometimes government spending is good, sometimes it's bad, right? I'm sure that the two Fox hosts drove on government-built roads to get to their studio, and sometimes government is wasteful. But to say the government spending is always wrong is the simplification of things into black and white that I think is what Sarah Palin is all about. And Rush Limbaugh. The idea is government is complex, economics is complex, cap and trade and global warming is complex. You can't understand it, Americans. We'll simplify it for you. Taxes bad, government spending bad, Democrats bad, Obama, terrorist Muslim born in Kenya. And there are people who are willing to lap that stuff up. I do think that there are a lot of people in the Republican Party that not only hate the Democrats, they actually hate intelligence. They actually hate a college degree. They think that if you've had any kind of training, well, you don't know anything at all. But I want to hear what you think at 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Tim from Buffalo has been hanging on the line. Tim, what are your thoughts?
Hello. Hi. How are you?
I'm good.
Okay. I thought I wouldn't ask that question. But first of all, I think it's necessary for me to disclose to you on your show.
Okay.
It's the first time I've ever listened to this particular show.
Okay.
Levine, and I'm glad you
Welcome.
Made the clip there from Fox News. I'll disclose to you that I'm a registered conservative, so
okay.
you'll probably enjoy our conversation.
Probably a registered Republican, unless you're a member of the Conservative Party in New York, which I know exists.
Pardon?
There is a Conservative Party in New
yes.
York. Are you a registered conservative for the Conservative Party or a registered Republican?
I'm a registered conservative.
Oh, okay. All right. You could say that in New York. Most of the country doesn't have the Conservative Party.
Okay.
Go ahead.
We have a Conservative Party, and I'm registered
right.
as a conservative.
There you go.
Switched out of the Republican Party during the Clinton era somewhat.
Okay.
In between there. I had at one time been a registered Democrat, but that's neither here nor there. I'm no longer a Democrat. But
okay.
Let me just – you hit on probably, I would say – 20 different topics there in about 40 seconds.
I try to cover a lot.
That would probably take you and I 4 months to discuss. So.
Well, why don't you start with the thing you found most offensive, and we'll go from there.
Oh, I didn't find anything offensive.
Oh, good, good.
I really didn't.
Well, the thing you most disagree
fact,
with, then.
I liked a couple of your points, and I'm not just saying that to patronize you. I did.
Well, no. Hey, I love it when conservatives agree with me. I think
well,
that's great.
I agree with you. I enjoyed your insight on your position.
Fair enough.
Okay, so I'm not going to say that I agree with you, but I'll take your insight and I'll look at it and I'll think about it. One of the things that we should mention here, and that is, and it's probably my pet peeve on a couple of different things, is that you keep quoting economic theory.
Right.
Right? And we have to remember that it's theory. So there are opinions that you've expressed that probably would be extremely difficult to prove one way or the other.
No, they're not hard to prove at all. I mean,
well,
people say that economics
example.
Is not a science, but it deals.
There's the opinion, your opinion, that it was government spending, the New Deal, that pulled us out of the Depression.
That's right.
Right.
And I can go through economic history and give you my reasons for that theory and the reason why most economists would agree with me.
I agree. I agree that there's that theory is out there. I'm not saying that is the truth or not the truth. I will say that at this point, I really wouldn't know enough about it to say one way or the other which one it was. Was it the war that actually pulled us out of that mess, or was it the New Deal that pulled us out of that mess?
Tim, do me a favor. I can hear the radio in the background.
I
want to take
a
quick break.
That's a TV.
Oh, that's a TV. If you could do me a favor, just turn
that
TV off. We're going to take a quick break, but I'm coming back to you. I'm not giving up on you.
Okay.
You stay on the line. We'll take a break while you turn down a TV and also invite other listeners to call in as well. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. And when we come back, Tim, the conservative, is going to respectfully tell me where he thinks I'm wrong. Can't wait.
Hey guys, this is Todd Palin. Don't tell anybody, but I'm a secret fan of the Leslie Marshall Show. I sneak and listen when Sarah's out on one of her $150,000 shopping sprees. She won't even buy me Legos. Anyway.
Dad!
Oh crap, I gotta go. Sarah's making me go helicopter hunting with her.
Dad!
Good thing I can bring my laptop and listen to Leslie streaming at LeslieMarshallShow.com.
Dad?
Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine with the honor and privilege of filling in for Leslie. I think we're going to hear from her in the next hour. If not, I'll just stick around until she gets back, holding the fort, as it were. We've been talking about Sarah Palin. It kind of morphed into a discussion of conservative and liberal ideology. I never mind talking about ideology, just like I never mind talking about economics. Frankly, I think it's talked about too little. Usually people are full of a lot of rhetoric. And, well, history matters. In fact, Sarah Palin, in her new book, get this, says that government spending in the 1930s, get this, this is a direct quote, massive government spending programs actually helped turn a recession into the Great Depression. Sarah, the Depression came first and then came the New Deal. I don't know how you actually turn history backwards, Ms. Palin. Governor Palin, ex-Governor Palin, how the government programs of the 30s caused the depression that began in 1929. But I'm curious to hear her view on that. I don't think she quite understands it. But it is important to talk about economics. And one of the things I like about Tim from Buffalo, who's been calling in, he is a registered conservative with the Conservative Party of New York, but he's been very respectful. And he even said I made him think a little. I like that. Tell me, though, Tim, where you think I'm wrong.
And it wasn't my intent to call you and point out where I thought you were wrong. But I just wanted to make the point in calling in. The one main point I wanted to make was that the economic discussions that we're having right now are all based on theory and not law.
So, well, you know, theory is an interesting thing. Hold on. I mean, okay. The idea of an economic theory. Okay, there are lots of theories. There are theories in science, too. One of the theories is the theory of gravity, the theory that actually the Earth holds us on here by its large mass. And maybe that theory's false. Maybe we all float in the air, and actually there's these little, I don't know, these demons that pull us down. But that's a theory. See, scientific theory, whether in social science or physical scientists, what a theory means is it's the best explainable way to explain pieces of evidence. That's what a theory is. And some theories are better tested than others. But you can't say that it's not a fact because it's a theory, or you'd have to discount the theory of gravity as well.
No, the theory of gravity is no longer a theory of
gravity. Yes, it is.
It's considered the law of gravity.
Well,
it's transposed itself from...
And there are economics laws as well.
...to a law.
Well, you know, that's a lot of that semantics. I can tell you this.
No, it's not semantics.
Well,
it's
here's the thing, Tim.
If you
take college economics, if you take college economics in any university in this country, doesn't have to be Harvard, it could be anywhere, it could be Buffalo State.
I've taken economic classes. I'm not an economist.
But you take an economics class, and what will they teach you? They will teach you that to prime the economy, you need more government spending or tax cuts. They both do it, by the way. It's not. I don't claim it's only government spending. You need deficit spending that causes the economy to move for the same reasons that Jeremy was saying. He kept his job as a teacher so he could afford to buy Christmas presents for his kids. And then the people who work in those stores, they make more money. They can go home and they can buy more things. And that keeps the government, the economy moving. I mean, you don't dispute that, do you?
The economy is an animal in and of itself. It's not... The government doesn't create the economy.
But the government can stimulate the economy.
In positive and negative ways, but it is not the economy. All right? And nor
it's a part of the economy.
It is part of the economy.
Right.
Correct.
So it can stimulate the economy.
How much of a part of the economy it takes up will affect it one way or the other, depending on how I would say efficient it is as a government. So,
okay, but you're not disputing the basic fact.
Our conservative theory says that, first of all, fundamentally, we want as small a government as possible to be efficient, to provide the most benefit that it possibly can, necessary benefit that it possibly can.
Okay, but Tim, that's an ideological point you're making.
Yes, it is.
Just to be clear, there's an economic point. I just want to separate the two.
Okay.
The economic point says that the more you run deficits, the more it stimulates the economy, which is why you should run deficits in bad times, but in good times, you should run surpluses and store that money away for the bad times.
Well,
now,
so
in order to get a deficit, you can get it one of two ways. Conservatives say you should cut taxes. Liberals say you should have more government spending. That's an ideological choice. And we can talk about whether or not you want tax cuts or government spending. That's an ideological choice. My point, though, is a broader economic thing, which is that either cutting taxes or government spending primes the pump, makes the economy grow. That's something that economists don't dispute. And that's the point I was trying to make right there on Fox. Do you agree with me on that point?
Here's a distinction I would like to make. First of all, with these deficits and surpluses and the budget, you can have a government budget, and you can get a conservative to agree on this. You can actually get a conservative to agree to raise taxes.
George Bush Sr. did.
The overall budget.
So did Ronald Reagan.
Is not sufficient, okay? If an overall budget is not sufficient enough to provide a country with the necessary items that it needs to provide it as a valid government, then cutting taxes would not be the right thing to do, and we would need to raise taxes. For example, if our justice system was completely inadequate and we were unable to provide adequate justice in a society by a government because it was not funded correctly, any conservative would say it would be necessary for us at that time then not to cut taxes and to raise taxes.
Now, I understand your point, Tim.
You see what I'm saying?
No, I do.
You
believe in as minimum a government as possible.
But you understand there are
some necessary things. I have to say that is, I don't know if it's a conservative argument. I think it's actually more of a libertarian argument. The Republicans love deficit spending when it came, for example, to the Iraq War. Now, I don't know a single Republican, and maybe this is why you're not a Republican anymore. I don't know a single Republican that didn't believe two things as strongly as could be. Number one, they supported the war in Iraq. And number two, they didn't want to pay for it. I don't know of a single Republican who agreed to raise taxes to pay for that war. They wanted to print money. They wanted massive deficit spending. They wanted massive government spending, even in the good times, relative good times, of the 02, 03, 04, and they didn't want to pay for it. But you never heard Fox News at that time complain about that deficit spending. Let me ask you, though, and then I want to get on to Scott and Cape Cod. Let me ask you, did you, one, support the Iraq War, and two, support raising taxes to pay for it?
I'll tell you right now, I still support the Iraq War.
Did you support raising taxes to pay for it?
I supported the Iraq War from the day it started. I also, I'll tell you this, that, and there's the only person that can confirm this with me would be my wife, but at the time we went into the Iraq War, I warned and stated that if Bush is going to do this right, he has to recognize that there is going to be insurgencies from the Syrians and the Iranians.
But answer my question. I don't want to talk about the war. I want to talk about the deficits.
Okay.
Did you support raising
taxes
to pay
for
the war?
All right. And I would also, I don't think it was necessary to raise taxes to pay for that war. Okay?
Well, someone had to pay for it.
There's plenty of government spending.
Oh, okay. You would cut Social Security and make grandma starve, I guess.
Taxation. There's so much tax right now.
See, I got to say, thank you for your call. I do want to get on to Scott and Cape Cod. I appreciate your call, but to me, Tim, and you've been very nice, and so I don't want to be in any way unfriendly, but to me, you represent a typical conservative view, which is we can do anything we want. Conservatives will tell you, no, don't raise taxes to pay for the war. We want the war. Just cut all those liberal things like health care for seniors and Social Security and children and all that stuff that conservatives hate. And liberals will tell you, no, don't raise taxes to pay for the stimulus package. No. We'll just cut the Iraq War and we'll cut the benefits to pharmaceutical companies and to Halliburton, all the things that liberals hate. And what I was trying to say is that both are a little dishonest here. There is a difference. There's an ideological difference. Yes, Republicans tend to like things like the Iraq War. They tend to like no-bid contracts to Halliburton. Democrats tend to like things like children's health care, Social Security, and so forth. And both sides say, well, we don't have to raise taxes to pay for it. We'll just cut the other guy's programs. Well, you can do that, but then don't complain about government spending. If you want to complain about liberal priorities, say, I hate Social Security. I hate Medicare. I hate children's health care. argue for cutting liberal priorities. Cut money from the schools. Cut money from the police. Cut money from the teachers. At least be honest about it. But don't claim, oh, government spending's out of hand, but I don't want to raise money to pay for this war that I love. If you support programs, you should be willing to raise taxes to pay for it. And that's why both parties are lying through their teeth. They just want their own priorities. Scott from Cape Cod, I hope you'll stick on through the next hour so we can talk with you then. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543.